from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about what Indiana's art and music educators are up to this semester.
I'll get a preview of a new performance titled Burlesque in Brushstrokes.
And I'll get a preview of the play Jackie and Me at the IRT. Plus, there'll be our calendar of events we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. February 14th this year is Valentine's Day, of course, but another group who'll be showing a lot of love that day will be Indiana's art and music teachers when they participate in the Art Advocacy Day at the State House. Travis DiNicola talked with Lane Velayo, the executive director of the Indiana Music Educators Association, and Clyde Gaud, the advocacy advisor for the Art Education Association of Indiana, about the Advocacy Day, as well as about research on the importance of creativity development in the classroom.
Clyde, Lane, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys both in our studio.
Thanks for having us, Travis. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Clyde, good to see you again, as always.
Thank you, Travis. We really appreciate you welcoming us onto the show.
Well, this is important stuff. I mean, you represent art educators, music educators throughout Indiana, throughout the state, and there's a lot of great stuff to celebrate in terms of the work that students are doing and the work that our art and music teachers are doing. But there's also concerns as well. And I know that you two today, I know there's some interesting research you wanted to share, but let's start with just sort of a brief, if you will. Lane, let's start with you. What's sort of the state of music education right now, you being the executive director of Indiana Music Educators?
Well, you know, it's appropriate the timing of our get-together, actually. This Thursday through Saturday will be our state conference, and we'll bring together about 1,000 music educators. We'll bring together even more students and parents and celebrate professional development within music education, but we'll also be able to celebrate some of the top music students statewide as they participate in honor bands, all-state orchestras, all-state choirs, etc. So that's the exciting, fantastic part of the celebration piece. But there are things to definitely be concerned about. You know, we're coming out of a recession. There are issues with school funding that we are continuing to face, and this is a budget year at the state legislature.
Sure.
So we're going to closely monitor that. We think that with the election of Superintendent Glenda Ritz, that there are going to be some really positive conversations that we have, and we look forward to working with the state legislature to make sure that arts education as a whole becomes a part of any conversation when we talk about music. Education reform or anything like that. So I don't like to look at it negatively. I think that we're all on board to make sure that the educational system for our students is the best way possible. And I think it is our job as the Indiana Music Educators Association or the Arts Education Association of Indiana to make sure that we make the appropriate case for why music education, why arts education is so important to the school curriculum for every single student in Indiana. And there are some very compelling correlative studies that I know Clyde has talked about and will talk about to support much of that.
Well, and one thing I want to say that I was glad you used arts as the plural there, because it is, certainly art and music education are the two areas that most people think of first in schools, and that's where the majority of our trained teachers are who are teaching the arts in school. But it's also dance, it's also theater, it's also creative writing, photography, other areas of the arts as well beyond just art and music, but that's what you're representing, certainly. Clyde. Art education, specifically visual art. What's the state of things right now? How are you feeling about things?
We are happy that we currently feel the association. We've been keeping tabs closely on what's happening across the state. I know there were some art cuts that took place between 2009 and 2011. And we hope there are not any more taking place. I know art cuts take place in a myriad of different ways, but for the most part, we are happy, the association is happy that that we're not seeing significant cuts. I know there was a funding shortfall in 2011 that affected several school corporations across the state, and we're hopeful that we don't see something like that again. Our reason for this, for keeping tabs on the state of art education in across the state, is creativity. And creativity is something that is so important within the realm of our civilization. You look at various studies. Creativity is a huge part of the success of in the professional world, in throughout any profession, creativity plays a big role in positive outcomes of
Certainly, and I think, I mean, and that's a really good way to look at it, because this is more than just saying, you know, you're helping students become professional artists or professional musicians. And certainly some will take that path. They will go on. They will, you know, have majors in college in the arts or in music and pursue that. But for the most part, we're really talking about working with students who may not ever, you know, have any dreams of pursuing that professionally, but making the arts, making creativity a part of their entire education.
Exactly, Travis. And, you know, if you think of the human mind as a static entity, it's not. It's an organic system. And creativity is creative experiences are a fundamental part, or should be a fundamental part, of a child's education. And so the earlier that children engage in creative experience, we know that those kinds of experiences last with them a lifetime, and then later on will transfer. I mean, we have many examples. For example, Elaine and I were talking downstairs in the lobby about Albert Einstein, and his music was so important to him as a young child, and later on when he became... after he began writing theoretical physics, people asked him, and he explained in interviews during his lifetime that he was able to write his theories based on music, on musical notation. And so the arts are they're a multisensory experience, and they, you know, human beings are hardwired. We are biologically hardwired to learn through multisensory experience, and the arts epitomize that.
And to create through that. And certainly there's been numbers of studies about the benefits of music to students studying math and science. There's been great studies about the power of after-school art programs, especially theater, in helping with kids who are at risk, perhaps. Many studies about, you know, the more participation in the arts, whether it's in school or after school, leads to kids going to college, staying out of trouble, and so on. But there's studies and studies, but I know you two are very passionate about these things.
Absolutely. I mean,
and you see it every day, Clyde.
I see it. I brought my iPad with me, and I've got, it's loaded with images of children and super engaged in art experience. And you know, it's a whole body experience when you're engaged in the arts, and so your mind is attuned to all the things that are happening to you in that moment.
I know that there was a recent study that you had mentioned to me earlier. Tell me a bit about that.
The IBM Corporation did a study in 2010, and they interviewed 1,500 CEOs from across the world of major corporations, and they asked them what was the secret to their success, and they said creativity. And so we know creativity is an important part of what takes place outside of in the professional realm. So But moving back to school experiences, the creative act is it's so engaging and it's so beneficial to the children. And if you think about the act of creativity, it begins with the stimulation of the imagination. The imagination, if we were to define it, is something that doesn't exist yet, but exists inside of our mind, and we could call that an idea. And now we're going to go about and take that idea and transform it into 2, 3, or 4 dimensions. Later on, we'll take that idea, this thing that we've created, and we can turn it into something related to innovation. And so being able to do this mm-hmm. process is so important later on in our lives.
Well, certainly it's a way of understanding the world. So let's talk about the day that's taking place on February 14th for the Art Advocacy Day at the State House. There will certainly be a lot of teachers there. You're encouraging parents and students as well to come and let our legislators know how important art and music education is. Is that fair?
It's an event sponsored by the Indiana Coalition for the Arts, and it is comprised of it's being supported by multiple arts education and arts organizations mm-hmm. Throughout the state of Indiana. We're encouraging everybody to come down there, and we think that this is sort of one opportunity amongst many for us to really focus the discussion on the benefits of arts, the benefits of arts education, and not only what it does. You know, it's not just about the educators, but it's about what does it do for the students and the number of positive benefits and the studies that Clyde has pointed out, amongst many other things that need to be pushed forward to the front of the conversation.
You know, and it's interesting when you talk to other teachers and teachers in other subjects, science or math or English, and they'll tell you the same thing, like, you know, that the arts help them in what they're doing in their classroom. You know, I know that you know, there's always a lot of talk about STEM, of course, science, technology, education, math. One of the phrases that I really love is when people talk about putting the arts in a STEM, which makes it STEAM, you know, and gives it that extra power.
Absolutely. And it's not just about when we talk about the creative aspects or some of the other mental things. We know that participating in the activities that they participate in, it helps them be better citizens in the mm-hmm. long run, because they're learning time management. They're learning positive habits when it comes to study and practice and working by themselves on a more regular basis. And all of those types of things come into play when you're talking about music education and arts education. To better perfect their craft, they have to be able to do all of those things while keeping up with their schoolwork, and that, I think, makes them better citizens in the long run.
Well, we all know that one of the strongest voices heard in education, of course, are parents. And so I would ask you two gentlemen, what is it that parents can do, parents who understand the importance of the arts in education? Write their legislators, attend the advocacy day, tell their art teachers thanks?
I think it's all of those types of things, but our parents need to realize that it's not something that is not out of their control. They absolutely have control in dictating the conversation. When we talk about funding, it happens at the local school district with the superintendents and the school boards, and they need to be knowledgeable about when those meetings are taking place or what conversations are happening and how that is affecting their art and music education programs within those schools. They can come and to the Arts Advocacy Day, like on February 14th, and that's extremely important. But our legislators look at their emails, they look at mm-hmm. the volume of phone calls that they're receiving on certain issues, and we need to empower our parents on a more regular basis to call in and let them know what's going on. Because, you know, I've spoken with these legislators, they do listen to what their constituents are saying, and the parents of all of our students can make such a big impact by just making one phone call when those issues occur. So they definitely have so much power to do those types of things.
Claude, anything you'd like to add to that?
For parents interested in supporting the arts, as Lane said, parent voices are critical. Parents who wish to contact their legislators, you can find their contact information off of my art advocacy blog, or they can go on the Indiana government website and find
and that,
that
blog is the savearteducation.blogspot.com, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Travis DiNicolo with Lane Velayo, the executive director of the Indiana Music Educators Association, and Clyde Gaw, the advocacy advisor for the Art Education Association of Indiana. The Arts Advocacy Day takes place on February 14th at the State House. For more information, visit savearteducation.blogspot.com. Again, savearteducation.blogspot.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Everything old is new again, if you ask Eloise Batic and Dan Shockley. They're at the helm of a new multi-company burlesque show collaborative that's bringing classic paintings to life at the Athenaeum on Friday, January 25th at 8 p.m. Darlings of Bottoms Up Burlesque, Angel Burlesque, and Creme de la Femmes will entertain to live music. And I can't wait. Sharon Gamble peeked into the subject.
I want to ask each of you, how did you get interested in burlesque?
Well, I have actually been a performer here in Indianapolis with Bottoms Up Burlesque for about 7 years. Bottoms Up Burlesque was one of the first troupes to sort of kickstart a revitalization of the burlesque movement here in Indianapolis. And very proud to say that today there are at least 4 troupes that regularly perform here in Indianapolis, a couple of additional troupes that pop up for special events or put on their own shows periodically. So what started as a singularity burlesque movement about 7 years ago has now turned into an amazingly robust scene here in Indianapolis.
And I suspect we're not in a vacuum. There must have been a revitalization across the country.
Absolutely.
Do you know what sparked that?
I don't. I think it really has sort of dovetailed with the reemergence of the roller derby movement. It's really sort of a kind of post-feminist noir kind of fashion and attitude and culture that has really supported the growth of sort of women's organizations that support diversity in image and diversity in attitude and have really encouraged some freedom of expression that is manifesting itself in a couple of different ways.
So did you help start the Bottoms Up troupe, or did someone who did help start it say, Eloise is our kind of girl, we should talk to her about it, or how'd you get involved?
No, I cannot take credit for that. Actually, Bottoms Up came about as a result of the punk rock night scene at the Melody Inn. They decided they were going to have a girls of punk rock night show that was going to include female-fronted bands and would be sort of interspersed with a couple of burlesque numbers in between bands. And by burlesque, I think it was really more of girls in corsets dancing to sexy songs. And since then, additional girls have joined the group. Some of those original founders are no longer affiliated with Bottoms Up, but have gone on to start other sort of kind of spin-off projects. And now it's just really matured in terms of how much people put into the numbers that they do, how much research they do, how much they try to honor the spirit of the performers who come before and really build off of a creative expression, an established expression of art that has a long and very proud history.
And Dan, I suspect that your theater background might have something to do with your interest. Am I
correct? Yes.
On the right path there?
You are, absolutely. I've been involved in theater here in Indianapolis for the last 25, 30 years.
And yet you're so young.
I started
as a mere child.
Right. And so this is just a new expression for me to work with Eloise and to direct the show with her. It's been a really great opportunity to delve into a type of theater I've not ever been involved in before.
So I have to ask this question. How scripted is it? Because the performances I've seen, I have the sense that if somebody's doing, say, 3 nights of performances in a row, that there might be a little bit of a change-up depending on what the vibe from the audience is, but there's a basic kind of set or script, or and help me with lingo
sure,
here.
Sure. Absolutely. I would say for myself, and again, I speak for myself because there's a wide variety of ways that it is approached.
Sure.
I think a lot of planning and a lot of choreography and practice goes into it, into what can look like a very improvisational, freeform dance. You know, burlesque is the art of the tease. So it's really all about sort of how you get there and playing with the audience. We have performed sometimes for some audiences that were not very receptive, and I think that shows.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a great audience, you are halfway there. But there is a tremendous amount of choreography and planning that goes into it. One of the things that's a little bit different about the show that we are directing is that we're performing to live music, which is wonderful because it gets back at the roots of American burlesque tied to vaudeville, where you had live music. Most of the performances, most of the shows, certainly here in Indianapolis, but I think definitely at the festivals that take place across the country, by and large, the performances are usually to track music. So
sure.
It's a little bit easier to plan for.
Yeah, because live music sometimes is a variable. Little different night
to night.
Yeah.
Dan's a big supporter of it.
I am. I just believe the live music adds a whole other entertainment element.
Sure.
And also offers the girls some spontaneity that they wouldn't have with, you know, a recorded track.
Sure.
So it's
if
it's
somebody's
exciting.
Getting a laugh or a particular response, there's the option to extend that portion of
Absolutely.
The routine, for example. Tell us about the ensemble the musicians that will be performing for you with this performance.
Kevin Kaiser has put together a band for us, and he plays in many theaters here in town, and he plays locally a lot of different places. Very, very talented musician, and so he is going to be at the keyboard and leading a band for us that will also have a live singer, I guess, as opposed to a dead singer. We won't have that. But we'll have a singer doing several pieces of the music. That's Aaron Konauer. And Aaron Konauer also is very, very well known here in Indianapolis.
Now, so I love the framing device of this and burlesque and brushstrokes. We're going to essentially see you interpret famous artwork, paintings mostly, mm-hmm. obviously, brushstrokes. So we're going to maybe find out what's behind Mona Lisa's smile, for example.
Exactly. This is a concept that Dan and I have talked about for a couple of years now and are so thrilled to see coming together. The idea that you can sort of build on the magic that art holds for so many people. There's such a desire to understand or maybe make up or dream about the story behind famous paintings and works of art that we see all the time. What was the inspiration for the artist? What's the secret story behind the painting or the characters in the painting? What's the story those characters tell me? So this was an opportunity to sort of focus in on famous works of art, specifically those that highlight female characters, and imagine their secrets. Imagine what would happen if those characters could step out of the painting and come to life.
And how will the audience know which paintings you're interpreting? Will there be projections, or how will we know?
We'll have a frame that all of the artworks will hang on. They're all hanging by projection. They'll all be projected.
Cool.
And so the girls will be able to come through the canvas and step out in front of the painting. And as they do that, the subject in the painting will disappear while the girl is in the front. And she may have some props with her, may have some other things from the painting. And then at the end of the number, she'll simply go right back through the painting and reappear.
Oh, cool.
And we'll have some museum goers. There'll be some art museum goers who are going to be walking
cool.
across the stage. And it's unfortunate, though, that the paintings only come to life when nobody's looking at them. So they'll just miss the number.
Which brings us to the very pragmatic element of, in addition to a unifying theme, you need a way to get from one act to the next, and you need a little bit of time to
Correct.
Clear the stage if somebody's used glitter or feathers or
yes.
Whatever. And you need time for the audience to recompose itself for
Correct.
The next bit. So will those be our museum goers?
Yes, that'll be our museum goers. And do you want to talk about the little bit of history we'll get with each?
Sure,
piece.
Sure. Well, traditionally at a burlesque show, you would have an MC in between numbers who
right.
would sort of break up the numbers in terms of an introduction or maybe an explanation of what you're about to see or,
mm-hmm.
You know, some commentary on what you did just see. We'd like to approach that a little bit differently for this and really build off that idea of being in a gallery. And so we're playing with the idea of the audio tours that you can take when you go through a gallery. So our museum goers will have the little handheld handheld device to be able to press the buttons and listen to an audio tour as they pass through our gallery. And so the MC script, or the announcements, the introductions, our guests at the show will hear in the form of an audio tour that our museum visitors are taking as they pass through the gallery.
So clever.
Yeah. We loved the idea of staying within the gallery rather than breaking up the numbers and taking you back to sort of remind you that you're in a theater. We really wanted to immerse you in an art gallery setting and let you experience almost a night at the museum approach of when you turn your head, these items come to life.
And because you have the entire history of paintings to choose from, I'm guessing there are solo pieces, there are duets, there are trios. There, what's the biggest ensemble, and what painting does it reference?
They're actually all solos. All solos. For a number of reasons, solos are much
easier
more
suited.
Yeah, they're much more suited to this type of performance, particularly because of the live music.
Yeah.
You know, I was smiling at Dan over the microphones here when we talk about live music and the spontaneity that provides. That is wonderful from a director's standpoint, not so much from the performer's standpoint.
Sure.
A lot easier to work with when you're working with a solo because you can improvise, and that's a lot more difficult when you have a group number going. There's also some logistics tied to the way that frame will work in terms of supporting weight and passing through that threshold that just makes the solo performance a lot easier to be able to adapt and handle.
And you're also working with a stage that's not enormous.
Right.
That helps.
Yes, the Athenaeum stage is just, it's perfect for what we're doing. Right. And they have been so kind to us in this project. They're very excited about this performance.
Do we know in the history, you know, that stage has been at the Athenaeum, that mm-hmm. building's been there for more than a century. Do we know if burlesque or vaudeville were ever performed there?
Well, we do know that vaudeville was performed there. I have not been able in my own personal research to really pinpoint any burlesque performances mm-hmm. that appeared there. We had the great honor of directing a show last year on the Athenaeum stage, Sin's Last Stand, for anybody who was able to see it, that really celebrated the history of American burlesque and sort of walked you through the evolution of that art form through reinterpretations by local performers of the famous numbers of burlesque history. We really chose to focus on national celebrities in terms of performers because locally the burlesque scene in Indianapolis was really one of performers passing through town rather than troupes or performers that lived here that put on regular shows at local venues. I would love, and
what,
I know that
conservative
Cassie
city back in the day? No, not us.
I know that Cassie at the Athenaeum, who, yes, has been absolutely wonderful to work with, would love for us to find some proof of burlesque yeah. taking place on that stage. And so I'm not going to give up until I find it.
So obviously with burlesque troupes bubbling up, so many here in Indy alone, and obviously there must be dozens in Chicago and some of the
absolutely.
Bigger cities. What kind of circuit is there, or is there I'm sure there's at least one professional association, trade association, whatever it might be called, and is there any way to take these really clever shows and enter them in a competition?
Well, there is. I have not yet run across a way to enter a show in a competition. That would be wonderful. But what has really sprung up in the last 5 or 6 years is the festival circuit. You have burlesque festivals taking place in most of the major cities, and I think we're going to start to see even more of those. For us, there's the Ohio Burlesque Festival up in Cleveland. There's the Windy City Burlesque Festival in Chicago. Las Vegas has the annual burlesque the title escapes me. The Burlesque Hall of Fame is in Las Vegas, and they do an annual sort of award show and, you know, festival kind of environment where you submit videotapes of you as a performer and then get invited to perform and be a part of it.
Sure.
So that is really growing. When I first started my involvement with the scene, it's more you're part of a troupe and the troupe puts on shows. It really, in the last couple of years, has morphed more to independent performers who appear as guest stars with troupes in their shows and do a lot more traveling, which is very exciting. It allows the idea of sort of different styles and different regional differences and whatnot to get a lot more exposure.
Is there an indie style now in this resurgence? Or are there six indie styles because there are multiple troops now?
There are a lot of different troops, and the troops all approach it very differently. And that's one of the exciting things about this show, is that while I'm affiliated with Bottoms Up Burlesque, we have representatives from several of the other troops as well. We have some performers from Angel Burlesque, who has really sprung up in the last couple of years as a major presence in the burlesque scene. We have performers from Creme de la Femme Burlesque, who several of which were actively involved with the original incarnation of Bottoms Up. So there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of friendship, a lot of healthy competition, and our styles are very different. There's another troupe who is not affiliated with this particular show, who has come up in the last couple years on the Northside Per Burlesque, that's really modeling their style off of the film, the Christina Aguilera film that came out a couple of years ago. Very different styles. But one of the key tenets of the burlesque movement is support, is really supporting your sisters, encouragement, building off of each other, and just having fun. So one of the things that we love about these shows that we've done at the Athenaeum is that collaborative nature.
Sharon Gamble with Eloise Batic and Dan Shockley, masterminds of burlesque in brush strokes. The performance will feature the Indianapolis Men's Chorus Small Ensemble, Indivisible as its opening act, and then members of Bottoms Up Burlesque, Angel Burlesque, and Creme de la Femmes will interpret great paintings to live music. Catch it all at 8 p.m. at the Athenaeum on Friday, January 25th. You can also search online for Burlesque in Brush Strokes and Brown Paper Tickets, or just look up Bottoms Up Burlesque on Facebook. But maybe not at work.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You and your lovely bride don't have any children at home, but for those who do...
Not that I know of.
You have fur children. You have four-legged ones. Yes. But I have some events that I don't think your kitty cats will be interested in, but some people with two-legged children might be interested in.
Ah.
And they're coming up on that calendar we call...
What do we do? With someone's kids.
With
or
someone's
nieces and
kids.
Nephews. That works well, too.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Right. And in fact, you can go to the Indiana History Center on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, for all kinds of great activities without kids. They're not going to stop you if you don't have kids in tow, you know, so don't worry. But there are all sorts of amazing things going on, including you can go a little bit early and you can watch coverage of the presidential inauguration in the Basile Theater.
Right.
Then included that day, free admission to the Indiana Experience. And you can take virtual time travel journeys with Destination Indiana. You can even try your hand at conservation work in the History Lab. And have songs sung live for you upon request in the Cole Porter Room.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that fun?
That does sound fun.
Yeah. That's all coming up this coming Monday, January 21st.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because that reminds me. There's a lot of stuff going on Martin Luther King Day.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the White River State Park is celebrating MLK Jr. Day again with free admission on the 21st. And so all the different park attractions are going to be open for free in exchange for food donations to benefit gleaners. And so that day, if you bring a can, then you can do things like go to the zoo and the IMAX Theater and the NCAA Hall of Champions, the State Museum, the Eitel-Jorg Museum, and even Victory Field, even though it's not baseball season. It's going to be open because they're going to have, I know, from 11 to 2, healthcare professionals from Wishart are going to be offering health screenings.
Hey, cool.
and things like that, and that's part of it as well. And, of course, Rowdy's going to be there also. But it's a great day, especially for families, because, they're doing a blood drive and all types of things like that. But if you bring a can of food to help out gleaners, you can go to all those things, the zoo, the IMAX, the NCAA, State Museum, Eitel-Jorg. That sounds like a great day.
Sounds like a wonderful day indeed. Say, on Wednesday night, the 23rd at 7 o'clock out at Book Mamas in Irvington, the Literary Ladies Book Club will be discussing Annie on My Mind by Nancy Garden. So if you've been thinking, I kind of like to try out a book club, Book Mamas, very friendly place. Kathleen
yes,
and company will welcome you with open arms. So think about going out to Book Mamas Wednesday night at 7 for the Literary Ladies Book Club. Again, the topic this coming week is Annie on My Mind by Nancy Garden.
Hey, something else to do on MLK Day, the Rhythm Discovery Center, which if you've never been to, is so much fun. It's sort of downstairs underneath the Weber Grill near the Arts Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are partnering with the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation on Monday in association with the Non-Foundation, and they're going to do a special discussion and performance starting at 11 in recognition of Martin Luther King. And they are going to have free admission, that day, which is great. But the performance includes Lawrence Clark III, who is just an incredible jazz drummer and jazz musician, and he's going to be performing. And then also there's, I mean, he talks about different great, you know, Indianapolis jazz musicians like Wes Montgomery and J.J. Johnson, Slide Hampton, Freddie Hubbard, and also following the talk, the drummer and Indianapolis Jazz Foundation Hall of Fame member Gene Markowitz is going to be leading a group as well. So that's a really nice day, too.
Wow, what an all-star lineup.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, speaking of music, the Ronan Chamber Ensemble will present its next concert on Tuesday, January 29th at 7:30 at the Wood Room in Hilbert Circle Theater. Ronan is mixing it up a little bit this season and using multiple venues, so make sure you go to the right place. They're in the Wood Room, Hilbert Circle Theater on Tuesday the 29th, 7:30. This concert's theme is Masterpieces and Young Masters, and it is the launch of a new educational initiative that features extraordinarily talented high school musicians performing alongside the Ronan musicians.
Oh, good.
So not unlike the side-by-side concerts at the ISO. On the program, the ever-popular Opus 8 Piano Trio in B Major by Johannes Brahms, also works by Alfredo Casella and Darius Mio. So all sorts of great music to hear on the 29th at 7:30, Wood Room, Hilbert Circle Theater. Tickets available at the door.
Very good. Hey, if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, and if you're not, you're welcome to be. Guess who are, Sharon? Well, you may know that I just loved going to see the graphite exhibit at the IMA last weekend. And this exhibit actually runs through April 7th. And if you haven't gone, I really encourage you to go check it out. It's free. IMA admission, of course, is free. And this exhibit, what's really neat about it is it's all contemporary art, but it's focused around one material, graphite. So, you know, like using, how do you use graphite in everything from sculpture, as a powder, as a liquid, as a pencil, as a stick. It's carved, it's used in these just amazing drawings and installations. And what I really thought was great about it is it gives you such a great overview, a wide overview, of what is happening in contemporary art by a number, about a dozen, I believe, of contemporary artists who have used this material in such different ways. And it's the type of exhibit that, you know, anyone who, I mean, who loves art can go to, but, you know, kids could go to it and say, oh, this part's really cool. Or someone who maybe thinks they don't like contemporary art could go to it. And I really believe find something in there that they would be amazed and astounded by. The technique, especially, of a number of the artists, but one of them that I want to mention, Molly Springfield, is stunning. The work called Translation, it has to be seen and read to understood, but when you really stop to think about what she's done to create this work, I don't want to give too much away, but you'll just be blown away by the effort that this artist has put into creating this absolutely stunning piece. A lot of other great pieces in it as well. Graphite at the IMA.
Runs through
April 7th.
Okay, so you have a little bit of time, but it sounds like the sort of thing you might want to go back and see a second time.
I'm thinking about it.
Now, if you want to try your hand at creating artwork, how about an evening of art and Chardonnay.
That sounds lovely.
You can enjoy an evening of dinner and wine paired with an art class at the Indianapolis Propylaeum, which is worth the signing up for just to see the cool building itself. It's in a downtown location. It combines an elegant Victorian setting with delightfully decadent food. You'll be treated to a salad, your choice of three magnificent main courses, a glass of wine, and a divine dessert. And afterwards, yes, after you've had your glass of wine, you will make your own wonderful work of art under the guidance of an experienced painter. When is it, you ask me? February 6th and the 15th at 6:30 p.m. So two opportunities for that.
Very good. Well, Sharon, we are out of time, so we will have to come back next week with more great ideas on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Baseball player Jackie Robinson's powerhouse contributions to the game he loved and to the American Civil Rights Movement are chronicled in Stephen Dietz's play for youth, Jackie and Me, which just opened on the IRT's upper stage. Travis DiNicola spoke with actors Robert Neal and Joseph Mervis about the production.
Robert, Joseph, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys in the studio.
Thanks, Travis.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thank you very much. And congratulations on the opening of Jackie and Me. And sorry that I didn't get to be there for the opening, but I'm going to be there in a couple weeks. I'm really looking forward to it.
Great.
So let's start with... let's start with who your characters are. Joseph, you've got kind of an important role here. What's your character here in this play, Jackie and Me?
I play Joey Stoshak, and he is basically just your typical kid, but he has a special power in that when he holds a baseball card, he has the ability to travel back in time to meet the player on that card, and he goes back to the year that that card came out.
I wish I had that power. What a cool thing. Right. I mean, and what's really neat about this, I mean, you know, it's based on this book, and it's actually a series of books, and each one of these books, right, there's different baseball cards, and the character goes back in time and stuff. But in this one specifically, going back to meet Jackie Robinson, which is a really cool story. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But Robert, who's your character in this?
I play multiple characters. All of the rest of us who are in the play play a wide variety of characters. But my main character is Branch Rickey. I also play Eddie Stanky, who was a player for the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. And I have a little cameo performance as Babe Ruth.
Oh, cool.
Right, yeah. Right at the end of his life, actually. He was dying of throat cancer at the time. But Branch Rickey is kind of my main role that I play. And, of course, anyone who knows the story knows that he was instrumental in bringing Jackie Robinson into the major leagues to break that color mm-hmm. barrier that was established there. And it's just really interesting because he's such a man of great courage and vision to do that. And it's just a fascinating story about the meeting that they had. It's based on a true meeting, about a three-hour meeting.
Between Jack Robinson and Branch Rickey.
Branch Rickey mm-hmm. called him into his office. He'd never met him before. And Branch basically puts him through all the different scenarios that he's probably going to face see if he can handle the verbal abuse and the stress and so forth. And it wasn't so much that Jackie Robinson was the greatest baseball player, which he was a great baseball player. Mm-hmm. There were better baseball players from the Negro Leagues, Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige among them. But Jackie was the right person to be the one to do this, because Branch put him under the restraints for 3 years, although he released him after two, saying that you cannot fight back in any way, verbally or physically, from all the things that you're going to face. And amazingly, that's why it's such an amazing story, and he was such an amazing person, Jackie Robinson did do mm-hmm. that. He
held
to
the
agreement.
Courage and strength it took to do that.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing story that I just never get tired of, telling.
Joseph, let me ask you about this. You're a younger fellow, and I know you've got a fair amount of experience in theater. You've been in other IRT plays before, but from a history standpoint, are you a baseball fan? Did you know a lot about the history of Jackie Robinson before this? I mean, what's your take on this all?
Before starting the show, I was actually not a baseball fan, which I know I'm kind of scared to say that now that I'm in this show, but, It was kind of unfortunate in that, I knew who Jackie. Everyone knows who Jackie Robinson is, but I kind of knew the information that you see on that history poster in your classroom.
Sure.
And so, just reading this script and I also did. Everyone in the cast really did their own research going into the show, and I really learned why Jackie Robinson is on that history poster in our classroom. And so that's been really interesting for me, because I did go to a lot of baseball games with my family when I was younger, but mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily a baseball fan.
Sure, but certainly knew the history. But it sounds like you have a lot more of an appreciation and understanding for it now.
Absolutely.
Now there's a really interesting twist. This is more than just about Jackie Robinson and what he went through. I mean, there's sort of a really interesting twist in this play itself, right? Tell me a bit about that.
Well, when Joey travels back in time to meet the player that's on the card, he also, as he's traveling back in time, he sort of makes these wishes that he doesn't really know are wishes until he gets back in time and finds out that they're true.
Okay.
So in the Jackie and Me is the second book in this series, and in the first book he goes back to meet Honus Wagner,
mm-hmm.
and as he's traveling back in time, he wishes that he would be treated as a grown up. And so when he gets back in time, all of a sudden he is an adult. Okay. So now as Joey travels back in time in this play, he wonders what it was like to be Jackie Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's one of my favorite scenes in the show is when I'm with Branch Rickey and we're looking in a window in his office and he's talking about how the kid in the window, you know, loves baseball and why on earth can't that kid play alongside white boys? And I don't know who that is. I think that there's someone outside.
They're talking
at the
about
window.
Somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, along with the audience, I kind of figure out that it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm back in 1947, I am a kid with black skin.
Wow. So, I mean, how do you take that on as a role as an actor? And I mean, physically, how's it conveyed? I was curious about this, but also mean just you as well. I mean, what does that mean to you?
Well, physically, it's nothing. Physically nothing happens to me.
Okay, it's just the way the actors on stage are perceiving you and talking about you.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as approaching this role, it's it kind of helped me find Joey's situation,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, Joey's in the same situation with I am with this power where he isn't fully aware of what it means, and so now that realization of that he's a kid with black skin, just seeing him go throughout the show, his journeys in the show would be completely different in 1947 if he was a kid with white skin.
Yeah.
So there's a scene that involves a water fountain, and in that scene I go in thinking that you know, I can drink from this water fountain, and all of a sudden there's this realization that, oh wait, you know, and now that I'm a kid with black skin, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And so it's a good way to, I think it's an interesting vehicle for the show to kind of take, not only as you know, a young person being able to transport kids into this, you know, kind of grown-up world and grown-up story, but also, you know, as someone who, I'm not African-American and going back in time, I might not necessarily understand really what it was like for Jackie Robinson. So
what's the response of audiences so far? I mean, you guys opened last weekend. There are a number of public performances for this, but most of the performances are actually for other kids, for, you know, school classes that come in through the IRT's educational outreach programs. What have you been seeing, Robert, in terms of audience response?
It's interesting because the student audiences are much quieter. They don't get a lot of the nuances of some of this humor, the things that we've tried to work into, or the subtleties,
uh-huh.
or even like the historical anachronisms they don't get. But what they do get, and what is great, is the...
Like, how come Jackie's not using a cell phone?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, that kind of thing. But what they do get is the incredible struggle that people went through to make race relations better,
mm-hmm.
And you know, there's some language that's used in the play, and we always have talkbacks after the performances when time allows with the students, and they ask really intelligent questions like the actor Beethoven Odin, who's playing Jackie Robinson, what's mm-hmm. it like to have those names hurled at you on stage, you know, and so it'll open up a really great dialogue about race relations and about the history, ultimately, of the civil rights movement, because Jackie Robinson came in right on the cusp of the beginning of the civil rights movement. And so it's a great way to talk about where we were then and how we got to where we are now and where we need to go from that point. And then the public audiences are great because they do get all of those mm-hmm. nuances of the anachronisms. And, you know, I find that a lot of people come who just love baseball.
Sure.
And so
I think baseball and theater go very well together.
They do, yeah. But they get all of those inside things about baseball. You know, they know who Eddie Stanky was, for example, which a lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we just opened, but I would say that the response has been extremely positive and rich. It's been really fun to do the show.
How is it for you, Joseph? You know, in terms of especially performing, you know, a show like this where most of your audiences are, you know, probably kids about your own age, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes, because a lot of Joey's dialogue in the show is conversations with the audience. So it makes it a lot different for me, you know, between our public performances and our student matinees, where
mm-hmm.
you know, with student matinees, we've actually been surprised at how really attentive all of the students have been, and how they've kind of been, and you know, our goal is that all of the kids kind of, jump on this journey with Joey. And I think that's fortunately what we found with a lot of the students. So it's just, it's really just kind of like it's fun to narrate with these young kids and mm-hmm. and interact with them and all of that. And then with our public performances, you know, like Robert said, just to have the adults and to have those nuances, that things that they remember. And so it's different, but both have been really exciting.
So I'm curious, are you homeschooled, or how does that work with, you know, being able to do all the shows and stuff?
I'm not homeschooled. I go to Sycamore School, mm-hmm. but we end up doing about 70 total performances for this, for Jackie and me. And
wow.
So we do about 2 student matinees every weekday. Mm-hmm. So basically what happens is I go to school for about a half an hour in the morning. I collect all of the assignments that we're going to have for the day. I go do our 2 shows, and then I come back for about the last half hour, and I talk to some teachers and collect the rest of the assignments. So that's been interesting, having to do 2 shows and then come home and do a lot of homework. But
And he never leaves the stage, I might add, for 90
wow.
minutes. He's on there the entire
really?
Time. So, yeah, he's quite the trooper.
Yeah. So, Robert, you and I have, like, nothing to complain about here as I'm listening to his
yeah.
schedule. Right?
Well, believe me.
You should see the backstage at this show with how many quick changes go on. It's
yeah.
unbelievable.
Yeah, we joke that the real drama is going on backstage as we try to change clothes and get back out on time.
Well, especially when you have actors playing multiple characters.
Yeah, we
like
all
that,
play, you know, 4 sure. or 5 parts, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I am really looking forward to seeing Jackie and me, and can't wait for that. And hey, let me ask you before I let you guys go, Joseph, have you become a baseball fan now?
Absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. And Robert, I mean, you're a baseball fan. You enjoy this. I mean, you even said earlier before we went on the air that, you know, one of the neat things about this play is it sort of fleshes out some things that the book doesn't even, you know, can't touch
yeah,
on, right?
Yeah, Branch Rickey really wasn't a character in mm-hmm. the novel. And so Stephen Dietz, the playwright who adapted it, you know, brought all of this historical stuff in. I'm more of a, when I was younger, like I was a big Red Machine fan, mm-hmm. the Cincinnati Reds, but there's nothing better, frankly, than going to Victory Field over here
Absolutely.
On a beautiful evening
mm-hmm.
and watching the Indians play in that old-time kind of thing. So, yeah, baseball, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, you know, let's the 3 of us get together and go out to a game sometime this spring,
yeah.
right?
Travis DiNicola with actors Robert Neal and Joseph Mervis. The play Jackie and Me runs through February 16th on the IRT's Upper Stage. Visit irtlive.com for ticket information. Again, irtlive.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when indie star food writer Jolene Ketzenberger joins us for some special and tasty interviews.
Yummy. I get to interview the new director of Encore Vocal Arts.
And there'll also be our arts calendar events that we call
What'll
We
Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.